In an unprecedented move, I am going to talk about last month's game briefly before we begin this month's theme. I mentioned
Final Fantasy VIII?
Yes. How you looked in the air and you thought about it.
I thought you were going to say Pokemon.
No. I'm going to talk about Final Fantasy VIII for a second because I mentioned I was disappointed in the lack of a Junction Machine alone. And, you know, the engineer that I am, I took matters into my own hands and I thought, well, what if I made my own Junction Machine?
Is that what that is?
Yeah. So I have here.
I thought that was the new automatic cat feeder.
This is kind of a, you know, a headset looking thing. And I'm going to put it on. It's so obviously alone doesn't exist in this world, right?
Obviously.
But a lot of people do exist. And I, as you know, we have like the all it took was to sort of analyze Alone's brainwaves to make a Junction Machine out of it, right?
And you did that with your original copy of Final Fantasy VIII for the PS1.
No, what I did was I went on 23andMe and I looked up. I mean, I was like, okay, I want to junction somebody, but I don't want to junction somebody that's like too different from me. Right. So I'm thinking like, okay, who's like a person that's out there that's like better than me a little bit and just about every way in terms of like, you know, it's kind of looking similar, but like more handsome and muscular, maybe better at voice acting, a little more famous. So this is the Junction Machine Benjamin. And this is going to junction. I hopefully if this works, I haven't tested it yet, but this will hopefully junction Ben Starr into my personhood.
Okay, I thought H. John Benjamin, but Ben Starr makes more sense.
That would also be good. No. Well, no, it's but it felt weird calling it just Junction Machine Ben.
Sure.
So I called it the
kind
Junction Machine Benjamin.
Cartoon Network vibe to that
one. Yeah. So I thought Benjamin was more, but here we go. I'm going to plug it in and I'm going to power it on.
Wait, is that a radioactivity symbol?
Where am I?
Hello.
Oh God, it's happening already.
I've woken up in front of a microphone. I seem to be in a recording studio. Okay, not too different.
Jeez, the memory erasure happens fast.
I believe I'm Benjamin, but I'm also there's somebody else here. What's your name, sir?
My name is John.
I know you're lying. I don't know why you're lying, but there's something, someone in me telling me you're a big fat liar.
Not about most things.
Okay. Well, now I know I can't trust you, but okay. Well, since I'm here, I don't know where I am or where I came from, but I'm assuming you want me to do some voices. Is that correct?
Sure, yeah. What voices can you do? Can you do, Jimmy Stewart?
I can do Clive.
You can do Clive?
Of course I can. What? Do you think I do Jimmy Stewart?
I don't know. Your thing is impressions, right?
No, I can do Clive.
Okay, Clive. Let's do Clive.
Joshua! Come back to me! No! Who did this to you? Joshua!
Okay, that's really good, actually.
Thank you. I'm a professional. I'm a professional voice actor.
I mean, you did originate the role, I suppose.
The only fantasy here is yours, and it will be the final fantasy.
Wait, is that an actual line?
You betcha.
I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him these days.
No, it's unironically is.
I need you to show me this later. I need technical evidence.
It's near the end of the game. One of the final confrontations with Ultima. It is, in fact, a line that I have to say, and it's quite stupid, I know. How about I do a Ifrit?
But we're like four layers deep at this point. Sure,
okay,
yeah, go for it.
There's a candle here. I can use this to summon Ifrit. And oh, what's this fancy machinery? I'm sure this has plenty of crystals in it for me to summon Ifrit with. Here we go.
Forget at least one.
Ifrit, come to me!
Hello, I am Ifrit.
Wow, Ifrit sounds different. Ifrit sounds more professional.
Yes.
Well,
professional and not. There's a hint of something else in here.
A little bit of playfulness, yeah.
Do you know who killed my brother?
I'm going to go with...
It was a horned demon.
Leviathan.
No, that guy is super not here. Unless you bought the DLC. Nope. It's a horned demon, kind of on two legs, big fiery energy.
Oh, Diablo.
Yes, that's the one.
I'm coming for you, Diablo!
On the machine!
Oh no, it's overloading!
Wait, the summoning! Okay,
the summoning! What are we gonna do? Ah! Oh man!
Oh good, you're back.
Oh fuck, man! That was awesome!
You can't do that again. You can't do that again.
What are you talking about? I was so hot. We make the trek up to Dracula's castle, and also the trek up to Inarius' castle, in both Super Castlevania and Diablo 4.
It's a storm of bus, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
I'm getting so much worse at this. Hello, and welcome to Storm Bones. I am your ghoul of light, Jerome Barbutsis. And I'm joined by my co-zombie of light, Alexander Hambrook. Feel free to say something. That is one of the many excellent musical themes of one of the games we are going to talk about today. Super Castlevania 4. Remember those machines?
What?
You know those little like ghost machines? That
oh,
like,
sure. You're right. Yeah, little plastic ones with like the shadow over them.
That's...
Well, okay. We've made the first 2 minutes of this episode unlistenable.
Are you kidding me? That was great. That was fantastic. This is Stormbuds, the monthly themed video game club, and you are, of course, tuning in to the first episode of October. The spooky theme this year is, of course, games with bones in them, as alluded to by the Stormbones thing. We are going to be talking about Super Castlevania 4, the classic Castlevania game. Is this your first Castlevania game?
It's my first of the old traditional platformer
style. Oh, right.
Style.
You mentioned the RPG stuff.
Yeah,
I played
like, well, so here's the thing. I played the ones that the genre is named after,
yeah.
But not the original ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the original ones started it. But the, so we'll also in the second half of the episode be talking about the first two acts of our long play, Diablo 4. Boy, are there a lot of bones in that one. There's a whole lot of bones in both of these games.
I got an achievement for killing a lot of skeletons.
Oh, don't we all? Yes. So let's talk Super Castlevania 4. Super Castlevania, it says, so a 1991 action platform game developed and published by none other than Konami for the Super Nintendo. You didn't have a Super Nintendo, I don't remember.
No,
so
my
there's
first
no, yeah.
thing was a Game Boy Color.
I don't remember having this exact game in my Super Nintendo, but I do have it on my Super Nintendo Classic, which was easy to play. And then I was like, why don't I stream this? So then I streamed the game again. I think I didn't, not all of it, but like a good chunk of it for some giggles on my Twitch. It's just my name, twitch.tv/JeromeBarbatsis. The VOD's up if you want to see it. What's there? There's some epic fails there. Some epic setbacks.
I mean, this is a game of epic fails is the thing. Well,
Yes. So first question, did you use the Konami code?
I did not use the Konami code. I didn't think to. Damn it.
It's a Konami game.
What does it get you?
I mean, probably like 99 lives or something.
You didn't use it?
I didn't. No, I didn't need to.
I mean, first, out of the gate, the thing that I was really struck by when I first started playing this game was like, huh, you know what is really weird?
Mm-hmm.
That Castlevania was a major gaming franchise that had games coming out reliably every 2 to 3 years for a 25-year span, was extremely popular, sold very well, was very well known, mm-hmm. and it basically just does not exist anymore because Konami decided to stop developing video games.
Yeah, oh well, that's a real freaking shame on their part because Castlevania is a good-ass series of video games. It would be really cool if there were more, but not heard from them since, oh, when was the last one? I don't even care. So... This is the one that takes place. So if we look, pull up the Castlevania franchise, we can find it in the here we go. Castlevania as a franchise starts in 1986, followed by Castlevania II's Simon Quest in 1987, Castlevania III in 1989, Dracula's Curse. The one shirt that our mutual friend got me a long time ago with What a Horrible Night to Have a Curse on it, that's from Castlevania 2.
Right.
Simon's Quest is the first Castlevania that actually does introduce a lot of RPG elements. Pretty controversial as well, though, because it has this day-night cycle. We're not talking about that game, but it has this day-night cycle, and it's like super annoying.
Well, like, infamously bad translation as well, right?
Yes. But, you know, which ones of these games don't? And where Super Castlevania 4 really shines is that it takes a lot of what makes Castlevania 1 and 3 really good, which is just the good side-scrolling jump and whip stuff, and it is very additive to it. One of the things that is most notable about the additions to it is diagonal whippage and up and down whippage.
Yes.
That is not a thing.
Very helpful.
Yes. Those are great. I think you can also do the dangly whippage. Mm-hmm. Also very fun. For those that have played Super Smash Brothers, the protagonist of this game is Simon Belmont. And if you are familiar,
Of
the New York Belmonts. And if you're familiar with Super Smash Brothers, you know that if you hold his attack down, he can like do his little stupid edge guarding whip thing.
Sure, yeah, a little like
That's in this game, and it's useful for taking out some of the maybe the bats or something.
I mean, you say this game is like really additive to the previous ones, but I was surprised by like how spare this game feels. Mm-hmm. It feels very. If I say bare bones, it sounds like a criticism, but I don't mean that. It's very lean.
It's really lean. It is jumping. It is whipping. It is pressing the special button if you happen to have special button stuff. Another thing that it was additive to is the whip upgrade system. So if you're not familiar with Castlevania's core gameplay, it is a side-scrolling platformer, and you press a button to whip, and it has a small delay, and that delay is super satisfying. It makes the whip feel like a real whip, and then you whip stuff, and then you whip all the way up a castle. It's very gothic, spooky horror, floating Medusa heads, vampires, skeletons,
ballrooms
zombies,
full of ghosts.
And ultimately Dracula himself. Great. So that out of the way, you can upgrade your whip by hitting candelabras, and the candelabras can drop whip upgrades or other special things that you can spend hearts that you collect all around to throw your axe in an arc or your...
The best one of these?
Yeah, the axe is surprising. Like it always surprised me how helpful that is because it's like I just need something that goes a little bit up or down because I can't...
Right, that's the thing, right? Is it like all the other ones are like, well, they can hit in front of me, but the whip can also hit in front of me.
Holy water is good for cheesing one or two bosses, but otherwise that one's a real tough one to use. It's a highly influential IP. If you've played Vampire Survivors, that game is unabashedly taking just about everything aesthetically from this from this IP, and all those specials, the axes, the way the axes behave, the way everything behaves, it's all from here. Well, very cool.
And like, again, like I've played the later kind of more RPG focused ones with the big sprawling maps that eventually will become the Vania part of the Metroidvania genre, and I was surprised by how many of the monsters in this game are just like, oh, it's that thing, it's the weird vines that spring from the floor.
Correct. And actually, so after Super Castlevania 4, you get Rondo of Blood. Like, there's a couple of...
Right, Rondo of Blood.
Which is... what is the action platform game? It's also... That has Richter in it. I don't think this one has as much of the... RPG elements, but it was a direct prequel to Symphony of the Night, which very much did... Symphony of the Night, probably lauded as the best Castlevania. I was interested in putting that one on the list, but it's also a bit bigger, and I wanted something that was kind of a couple hours of playtime because we're tackling a relatively large game on the second half of this. So, otherwise, I don't know what else to add.
I mean, I've got a few things I was thinking about while
I was
playing it, which is
just to ask you that.
Yeah, just like... This game is bastard hard, is the thing. And it's not even like there's two things about it, right? Mm-hmm. The first is that any one individual enemy is not that much of a problem to deal with.
Yes.
But because of the way that sort of like, you know, that the life system works and the deaths work and all of that.
Right.
What you're really trying to do is... You've got a boss fight at the end of the stage, and you have no reset going into the boss fight. And so what you're really trying to do is you're trying to get through these extremely difficult levels while minimizing the amount of sort of like, you know, aggregate damage that you build up so that you have enough life going into the boss to actually have a chance at defeating it. Which is like, that's the one angle of the difficulty. The other angle of the difficulty is that this game has a lot of jumping, and the jumping is very deliberate, and it is very easy to just miss a platform and fall to your death.
Yeah, there's something that's kind of funny, kind of shitty about this old game is that if the camera moves up a little bit and the camera is not going to move down later or anything, suddenly platforms that you know are there are no longer there, and then that becomes instant death. That happened to me a couple times.
Which I suspect it did not have to do on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Sure, absolutely. I believe they had to do that. On the Super Nintendo, no, that feels like a design choice.
They did that on purpose. There's also a couple of dastardly stairwells with bats coming at you. In other cases, that will knock you down and then instant gib you. Because if you just get got by a couple of monsters in a row, you'll get knocked out of position and just completely lose track of where you are. And it's very challenging to either... It's challenging to land on platforms below you. If I don't know. It's hard to... Stairwells in particular, you're very vulnerable, I think.
It's like part of me... was like, they don't make them like this anymore, but actually they kind of do. I feel like there was a period where they stopped making games that were this hard in this way. But the two things I was thinking of were, one, I think very clearly sort of like Dark Souls is very inspired.
Don't say it. I was like, don't say it.
What?
But you have to. You
if
have
not
to
Castlevania
say it.
Specifically, then certainly that kind of like the Nintendo, Super Nintendo philosophy of this very difficult, very punishing stuff. But also, I feel like we've seen a resurgence in the last, like, you know, few years as well of games that do focus on sort of like the precision of executing a perfect run, right? Of like, what you really want to do with this game is just to learn the level with such a degree of intimacy that like you can pull off, you're like, okay, I know how to do this jump, then I know how to hit that guy, then I know how to do this jump, then I know how to hit those two guys, then I know that I can get the axe here. Like, it's like you have to build up a very, like, almost level by level specific sort of rhythm that you have to just develop through repetition. And like, and I think that's starting to come back as well.
Yeah, and let's talk as well. The game design is pretty lean. There's some very cool iterations in levels about things that are about ways in which they play with perspective and ways in which they play with the mechanics. There's a hook mechanic where you hook your whip onto things that you're introduced to pretty early to try and jump across platforms, but later they reuse it and then shift the entire perspective of the platform while you
hook
onto the
hip. Mode 7.
Very cool. Also. Worth noting, this game came out since 1991, very early in the Super NES. And I mean, it came out in 1990. The Famicom came out in 1990 in Japan, and the NES came out in 1991. So Super NES came out in 1991. And the aesthetic of this game is pretty boundary pushing for the time. I mean, we saw how it looked, and the sprite, the pixel art's really cool. The portrait of the models and of like Death and Dracula, and things like that were pretty. They were gothic. They were scary. They were spooky. They were pretty.
That big rotating room is really technically impressive, even if it did cause my frame rate to come to a crawl.
And the music as well, as you sang in the start. The music in this game just fucking slaps. I had the theme of Belmont, that banana, da-na-na, da-na-na-na-na-na-na. I had that as my ringtone in college for a long time, and it took me a while to get over that PTSD. Until we, like, there was that, you know, that whole period in the early or the late aughts, early tens, where we. Maybe early 10s, where we all had songs on our phone for ringtones. And now that I'm in my mid-30s, I'm like, I can't believe I did that. Like, it just ruins a song. It's like, somebody's trying to contact me. Oh, God. Like, I can't play Castlevania for a while because I think my phone's ringing. Ew. I don't know if you felt that way, but it was still a good ringtone.
No, I was trying to remember which ringtone I had for the longest time.
Okay.
I had a track from Undertale for a while, which...
Well, that's 2015.
Yeah, I had an Undertale phase.
Well, okay. We'll get into that if Deltarune comes out. Deltarune Chapter 3 ever comes out.
I just think Undyne's theme is really good.
Undyne's theme is pretty good, but startling. Bad, bad, bad. Oh, God.
I wanted to get my attention when it was ringing.
Okay.
Now I have all notifications on my phone turned off.
Seriously. Oh, psycho behavior from both of us. Well, Did you get through to the end of this game?
I did not. I made it a good way through. I made it through the ballroom area with like the boss with like the dancers at the end. So like cool.
That's a fun
way.
One. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's good. It's worth doing. Especially, I mean, if you, I think you can do the Konami code on this game to make it easier for yourself if you want. The Dracula fight at the end is pretty cool. I think that just about does it for Super Castlevania 4 for our purposes. Had a good time revisiting this classique. If you haven't played it, you can access it on the Switch along with the other Castlevania games for like $20 if you want.
Part of the Nintendo subscription catalog.
Yeah, if you want to. I'm lucky that I already had it, so didn't really have to spend anything for it. But it's worth a visit if you're a retro gamer. We are going to take our usual little break, and while we do that, we have our ad read. So I am going to go sell all of my socks on eBay and then use that money to buy brand new socks that are all the same kind so that I don't have to worry about mismatching socks ever again.
We're gonna read some ads.
Womp womp, editing Jerome here. Alex said I had to fix this one in the edit. And you know, I don't think I'm going to. I think I'm going to leave this one mostly intact. Enjoy. Womp womp.
Just in time for spooky season, the hottest new streaming show is hitting Tovo.io.
Ooh, Tovo.io.
It's a new look at our favorite family of monsters. That's right. It's about the Munsters. Or more specifically, their son Eddie, played by Finn Wolfhard. That's right, in this modern revival of the Munsters, Eddie is off to Naval Academy, where he's going to get up to all sorts of hijinks as he clashes between his working class background as part of a family of gothic... Eddie is off to Naval Academy, where his background from a working class family of despicable monsters is going to clash against the high stress, high... intensity environment of the United States Naval Services.
Oh boy, I can't wait to go off to my first day at the United States Naval Academy. That's me, Eddie Munster. I'm at the Naval Academy. I hope it's not too stressful.
Hey, Eddie, it's your grandpa here in my coffin-shaped car, and I'm dropping you off in front of the academy, and everyone's looking at me very oddly, and I'm sure you're very embarrassed.
It's okay, Grandpa. I love you. I'll be home safe. I promise. Nothing bad could possibly happen to me at the United States Naval Academy. Do-do-do-do-do. I hope everyone likes my Pokemon backpack.
Eddie? Eddie? You forgot your lunch. Clang, clang, clang.
Oh! It's you!
It's me, your Jeff. Father, Herman.
Oh. Jeff, Herman. Herman, that's right. My dad. Thank you so much for this lunch. I couldn't possibly make it through the day without my fruit punch Capri Sun and my crackers and ham Lunchables and my vodka.
I don't know that this is working. I need to find a different angle.
Okay. It's like, I don't know the Munsters.
This is funny, but like I'm trying to like create context here. I'm trying to figure
just
out.
Keep pitching the show afterwards. You don't have to keep doing scenes. You can just be
that's
like,
true.
Just
that's
be
true.
The announcer now.
Mm-hmm.
Watch as Eddie does this.
He discovers that his nascent vampire powers are perfect for
oh, no. Maybe not. Like, maybe something that's like, that they would actually do at the first year.
Sorry. The problem is I haven't actually watched Wednesday, so I don't know what that show is about.
You also don't know anything about the Naval Academy.
No, I don't. Mostly what I know is the Munsters.
I don't know. Like, what would they do at the Naval Academy? I don't know. What would, like, it's a school, right?
It
would,
it's surely, a school.
Surely,
sure.
Surely Eddie Munster would get bullied.
Hey, Eddie, I think you're a freak because you have fangs and you can fly. And I saw you drink that guy's blood. I'm pretty worked up about it. And we're going to throw you in this locker in the submarine.
Oh, no, please don't throw me into this locker in this submarine. This locker smells like, oh, no, garlic.
Clang.
Oh, somebody help me. I'm useless. I can't possibly use my vampiric superpowers to get out of this locker in the submarine if there's garlic.
Now, Eddie, you've been here at the Naval Academy for 2 months, and I have to say, son, you're not shaping up. If you don't get your act together, we're going to have to send you back home to your family, the Munsters.
Professor Trevor, can't you please get me out of this locker? I'm still in here. How could I? Please help. Professor, where are you going? I can hear your footsteps.
Eddie, I'm afraid you must take responsibility for your own situation.
No, please. This isn't my fault. Professor, why are you singing the Munsters theme? Professor, please help! Please, just open the locker. I'm wakened by the garlic. What are you doing?
Eddie, streaming this October on Tovo.io. Boy, I really hope that comes together in the edit. You gotta work some magic on that one, okay?
Okay. Okie dokie. Can't wait.
We are back, and my socks all match. In fact, they match a little too well. I may have bought only left socks.
Is it uncomfortable?
Yes. I got ingrown toenails on my right big toe, and now it's crunched together, and I'm in constant agony.
You know what's also uncomfortable?
What?
My fingers after clicking this hard in Diablo 4.
Oh, wow. Yeah, good. What a smooth transition. We are going to be talking about, of course, the Blizzard 2023 game Diablo 4, the fourth installment of Diablo games. This is your actual first Diablo game,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken. This is not mine. I've played all the others. We had Diablo on my machine when it first came out, and I was too young, too scared to play it at first, but I did watch my brothers play it. And then when Diablo 2 came out in 2000, oh boy, was it hard to get on the machine to play it, because all three of us
were playing only Diablo
clamoring 4. For it. And then Diablo 3 came out. What a disaster.
What an event that was. See, that was the first time I remember any, like,
everyone was so mad.
Well, because our friends in college were in the beta, and so, like, I remember hanging out with some of them and, like, watching them, like, roll, like, the classes to, like, learn stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, man. And the Real Money Auction House. We don't have to talk about that. Everyone already has at this point.
Sure. Right. No new takes there.
No
bad.
New takes there.
Don't do it.
Diablo 3, bad at the start, took a while, got pretty good, but not ultimately kind of surface level gameplay. Diablo 4 aims to tonally kind of take it back to a more serious gothic horror vibe, definitely less brightly colored than 3. And long anticipated game from Blizzard Entertainment. It was going to be interesting to see how they were going to maybe more, hopefully more successfully transform Diablo into a live service sort of a franchise, given that that is what Blizzard does ever since the advent of World of Warcraft. It's a pretty interesting game and pretty interesting timing. I'm not just talking about Halloween. I am, of course, also talking about the coinciding upcoming release of Jason Schreier's new upcoming book, The Play Nice, The Rise and Fall of Blizzard Entertainment.
Yeah, no, I listened to a really good interview about this book. It sounds like quite a piece of journalism.
Sounds like a really interesting thing that you could pre-order now. And I'm not just saying this so I could get Jason Schreier on the podcast at some point in the future. This entire month is not a complete ruse for me to completely shill for free for Jason Schreier to come on the show. No, not one bit.
Not one bit at all.
No, it's an excuse to play Diablo 4.
I thought you were going to talk about because the expansion's coming out.
That's pertinent. We'll talk about the expansion at the end of the month.
I'll say out of the gate, this is more of a live service game than I was expecting.
I played Diablo 3 and that definitely fully turned into live service. And now this is fully live service, even though you must pay full price for admission for this game.
And then also buy battle passes. And it appears to mostly be cosmetic stuff, which I don't care about.
Yeah,
so.
No. There's cosmetic stuff in the battle. Well, there's Dumfries stuff in the battle pass if you care about it. There's also the expansion coming out that also costs money and stuff. So yeah, this is fully live service. If you are interested in getting into Diablo 4, just be aware that they are going to continually ask you for money for things that you don't need. Otherwise, I think it's generally speaking a pretty good time. How about you?
I'm having fun with this with some caveats about how, if I'm not sure if I'm understanding it correctly, because a couple of things. First, I was actually kind of surprised. For having not played a Diablo before, I fell right into playing this because I've played a lot of Dota, and Dota and Diablo both have their roots in like 90s era Blizzard sort of like, I'd call it gameplay technology. Like a lot of the ways that like abilities work and how they're sort of configured and the way that you think about how they have effects on like, you know, mobs and stuff. Very similar. So it was like, oh, okay, I understand this. I channel this and it causes chain lightning to bounce. And for every bounce, it's got a 20% chance to inflict vulnerability.
Well,
sure.
Yes, good news. While Diablo 2 was made by Blizzard North, which is a separate studio, it is still a Blizzard property. And of course, Dota has its origins in Warcraft 3 as a custom mode that happened that way. And so there's a lot of there's a lot of Blizzard DNA in both this and Dota, even if they have since evolved into their respective properties. I will say that, of course, this is not nearly as complex as a game like Dota or Warcraft. This is still very much a straightforward top-down action RPG dungeon crawling experience with abilities and stuff. Which class did you play?
I'm playing Druid.
Right, you're playing a druid. Have you decided that what kind of druid you're kind of leaning towards right now? Like, how are you engaging with the druid class?
So it's a couple of things. It's mostly storm stuff.
Yeah,
but I have turned this sort of like this powerful werewolf triple strike combo into my primary attack.
Yeah.
Because although it consumes spirit energy, I unlocked a perk that causes me to heal health every time the werewolf attack strikes, and I got an item with the perk that causes me to restore spirit when I restore a certain amount of health, which means that in fact I mostly have just gotten infinite werewolf swipes, which has been kind of a really good single damage sort of like nuke that I can do.
That's really cool. Well, that's cool that you're playing the storm, because I'm playing the bones. I roll the necromancer, and I have my caveat at first was I want there to be as many bones on the screen as I can get at one time. So I first started specking into every sort of bone spell I could, as well as summoning as many skeletons and mages and the bone golem as fast as I could. Then I realized later on that the bone primary and core skills didn't really synergize with high summoning. So I took those out and opted to buff my skeletons, because I figure a skeleton has like 200 bones, whereas just my spear and whatever are like 5 bones at once. So I could have more of those that are more powerful and on the screen at any given time. And then I just kind of sit in the back and curse everything while my minions kill everything. And it's great. It's really, really strong. Basically, the necromancers are also able to utilize enemy corpses that kind of drop from enemies, so like I can use them to cast corpse explosion or summon skeletons from them, or skeletal priests if I'm at max that will buff my skeletons for a short period of time. It's there's a lot to micromanage with necromancer. It's a really fun class, and I'm glad I chose it.
So here's where we kind of get to the bit where I'm trying to wrap my brain around this game, which is, how difficult should I be finding this game?
I will be transparent. I blazed through the main story pretty quickly. I have notes on everything, and of course I can separate everything out. I'm excited to talk about it. So not very difficult at the start. In fact, pretty simple.
Because like I bumped up to veteran, like, you know, going to the first dungeon, I was like, this is super easy. I'm going to go up to like the one they recommend for experienced Diablo players. And even still, I had difficulty with one boss fight, and then I've just been kind of like destroying everything in my path.
I think the campaign is it doesn't get that much harder. In fact, I had to stop trying to upgrade my gear because I was like, well, I don't really need to do this, and then it's just going to be relevant later, because like eventually, because I know how the end game in a game like this works, where after you beat the campaign, all the post game and seasonal stuff happens, and then there's more and more difficulties. There's the level 3 difficulty, level 4 difficulty, and then there's the torment levels, and there's all sorts of like iterative affixes that you can add to your dungeons and stuff. Typical Blizzard fashion sort of affixes.
So it's like, is the post game like playing the campaign again but no. harder, or like there's like
the post game is explorative content. World actual content, harder content, more boss rushes, more waves of monsters that get thicker and thicker, lots of stuff, lots of opportunities for explosions and gore and guts and ooey gooey satisfying gameplay goodness that, and I think it centers the gameplay pretty well. But there is also some additional seasonal storylines that I'm finding are interesting. I think they're supposed to lead up to the expansion. Given that I now know the ending and know what the expansion is really going to be all about, this I'm going to be interested to like go back and see what the seasonal storylines were, because they seem to be kind of tying everything. They seem to really be leading up to what's going to come in the expansion. But I'll, of course, keep my lips sealed. We're going to talk today about the story mostly. We're going to try and get through Acts 1 and 2 in this episode, Acts 3 and 4 in the next one, and then Acts 5 and 6 in this, and talk about our thoughts mostly about what's going on here.
God, I got to say, at the top, though, like, I'm enjoying this quite a bit.
Yeah.
Despite it being easy, the gameplay is engaging. I enjoy, like, you know, the visual design, certainly. Yeah, all of that is, like, good.
It won't get hard until the post-game. And okay. Then it'll get, like, really hard.
But, like, man, the story in this game, it feels like I am trying to grab onto, like, a greased bowling ball. It is, like...
every Diablo game is an endless wild goose chase. Every single one. So I knew that going into it, but it's still, like... We're going to get into the sort of, like, yes, it's I know exactly what you're talking about.
For as much production value as there is in this game, with these cutscenes and so much voice acting and so much dialogue devoted to what is happening, it's like, I don't know that I can tell you what this game is about. I can tell you what the plot events that happen.
Yes. Well, let's dig into it. In the prologue, there is one of those spectacular opening cinematics.
Oh, yeah, the flash triangle. It's great.
And, but there's some cool... bandits looking for knowledge and treasure in a vault, and the bandits seemingly sacrifice one person to try and make their way into the vault, and then that person shows up later as a pale-faced demon man who kills them all and tempts them, makes them willing sacrifices, well, makes one of them a willing sacrifice to summon out of a portal made out of a triangle of flesh the demon herself, the daughter of hatred herself, Lilith. Lilith is a fabled figure. Lilith is, like, Diablo has extensive lore, and Lilith and Inarius have been mentioned repeatedly and referred to repeatedly as the creators of Sanctuary after all this. So we finally get to see her, because she has been put away for quite some time.
Do we have any sense of how old Sanctuary is?
Yeah, probably. I don't know off the top of my head, but, like, we know... generally we know generally the course of events that happened to between like the primest evil, the seven-headed whatever demon's name was, and then the lord that sundered him, and then how that became into the Injurious Council, and there's all sorts of stuff.
Because, like, the way these people talk about it, it feels like their reality has existed for about 300 years.
It's not that long, no. It's really, I don't know, it's interesting. I don't know if there's an actual timeline, but whatever. I think the less we dig into the numbers
sure.
of the timeline, the more we dig into the themes of the story, the more fun we're going to have. So then that cuts to us in the snow. We lose our horse to some goblins, and we try to survive, make it into a cave, and almost pass out until we kind of pass out, and then in our sort of, like, delirium, we see a wolf emerge from the shadows, whose half of his face is completely torn off and etched with some, and the skull is etched with some runes in it.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's very creepy, but very cool, and then we wake up, and we're fine. I guess.
And we find this village beset by demons.
Yes, Nevesk. They tell us to go clear out a thing. We clear out a thing. That's how you learn that the game is about clearing things out. You come back. They celebrate. The villagers drug you in a cool twist. They drug the hell out of you and drag you to the back of a shack, which is really nice. The butcher there then stuffs your mouth with blood petals and is preparing you as a sacrifice when a member of the Cathedral of Light, Yosef, sneaks in, stabs the shit out of the butcher, and excuse me, and wakes you up. Then you have to fight off all the villagers.
Yep, we fight them off, and then we make our way, and on our way out, we pass by this chapel where we get, I would call it like an echo vision, almost.
Pretty much, yeah. We get a migraine, but this is a blood migraine. It's a blood petal migraine. That's the symbol on the ground, you touch it, and we get to see,
a little bit of
this
great cutscene, where, like, this church leader is, like, delivering this sermon about sinfulness and stuff to his congregation. He's called them all in, and then Lilith ascends behind him and is like, ignore that guy, listen to my dark power, and then all just immediately turn on him and stab the shit out of him.
The villagers are already very visibly irritated at this asshole pastor who's just saying, you guys are sinners and you suck. You suck ass. You need to repent because you suck so bad. And then Lilith's like, hey, I don't think you suck that bad. Why don't you listen to me? Why don't you listen to me? And they're like, fine, cool. That sounds great, actually. They murder the shit out of him. And
they hit him
gruesome.
With a spike disc. They stab him through the chest.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. We apparently passed out in the middle of that, and we have to, and Yosef said, burned the cathedral down, because he was like, oh, fuck that demon shit. Hey, I'm going to go to the cathedral. You should go check out this person who lives up in the hills, who is super cool, belongs to a super cool order called the Haradrim, and he should probably know that Lilith is back. And then we're like, okay, so we enter this person's house without their permission and start rifling through their things. Seems like a bad idea, but the guy is cool enough. This is Lorath Carr or something. I can't remember his last name. I just know him by Lorath.
He's full of knowledge.
This guy is voice acted by Ralph Ineson. I hope I'm saying his name right. Who voices Cid in Final Fantasy 16. Very distinctive voice. Very distinctive Liverpool voice this guy has. Very comforting and kind of gravelly in a way. He's cool enough. He lets us hang out. We tell him about Lilith, and he's like, all right. So we meet up with him in the big city in this zone, that whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, which is embarrassing because I've been there a million times, but I didn't put it in my notes. it's a little city, Armist, whatever. And then Act 1 pretty much begins right after he gives us three paths to take.
Yes, and there are each of the three paths is an act, but we did it in the order kind of like that's considered canon, I guess.
Not really canon. You can do any order you want, but we decided to do Acts 1 and 2. Act 1, you stay in the snowy zone, and Act 2, you go off to Ireland.
Yeah.
The snowy zone... Well, I mean, the prologue... What are your initial impressions of this game after the prologue so far?
My initial impressions of this game are the combat is very satisfying, mm-hmm. and the scene where that priest gets stabbed that has shifted out of him was really good, and I don't know what these demons want, or...
Yeah.
I just like open questions about why this is happening.
Right, good. I mean, those are good questions to have. I noted a couple things. One was that Yosef was in town because the church didn't get its tithes yet.
Oh, right.
And I was like, right. Is this game going to go in a direction that maybe the church isn't, like, super good and not in just, like, a demonic way? Because, like, churches in the past have been, like, fronts for demonic worship, but maybe this isn't... Maybe this is, like, going to actually say some stuff about light worship and...
Yeah, no, my first impression of the church when we meet them in Chapter 1 is they seem like a bunch of pricks.
Yeah. So we head up to the cathedral to talk to the mama religious lady, Prava, I think her name is.
Something like that.
She tells us about a sighting of a demon lady out east, so away we go.
It's great. She's just like, that girl was talking about the demon. Yeah, I mean, she's crazy, but you can go find her if you want, I guess. She just headed out to that camp where a bunch of knights mysteriously went missing the other week.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, interesting coincidence there. We head out to that camp and we run into the guard who is guarding the mineshaft under the orders of the cathedral to not let anyone in. And it turns out, though, that a woman did get in by bribing this guard with some gay-looking jewelry, some fancy sparkly jewelry, Very nice to let her in the mines, and she's as she's accompanied by this somebody that is very obviously a demon. But, you know, what are you going to do? Say no? I don't know. She's apparently not even disguising herself, and people do not give a single fuck.
Yeah, no, this is going to be the girl in question, her name is, I believe, Nayrel?
Yeah, Nayrel is the girl, and her mother is Vennard.
Yes, and we're going to, repeatedly, the thing we seem to, are going to start seeing here is sequences where we get sort of flashbacks to Lilith basically just talking to people and being friendly and folks being like, wow, yeah, okay, I'm all in, let's go, Lilith.
You know, yeah, she has some good points.
Like, she doesn't need to make, Lilith is not making the hard sell here.
She doesn't really have to, because the cathedral sucks and people are actually kind of okay with just doing anything they can to fuck them over. But I mean, this Vigo guy is obviously kind of suffering in the money department or whatever, or has his vices. And we learn from, with Vigo and Nayrel at our side, we go into the mines to stop Lilith. We make it to the bottom. And, at this point, I'm realizing that some of the small early dialogue is really having no impact on me. I was like, I kind of don't know anything yet about these people. But hopefully, I'm not really getting their personalities, or it's like, oh, it's just very generic stuff at this point. And I think
does that
it takes
change
a,
later?
I think it changes later, but much later.
Okay. Yeah, because that's the impression I've got also. But we find at the bottom.
There's a decent amount of Hollywood drip in this game that's just sort of like, this is very much, there's a Hollywood written game, like as if it were a movie. Like, I don't know. There's not every line hits super hard, but it's fine. Some of them do. We learn, as we get to the bottom, we get another vision, because you can touch some blood petals. That's what we do. We're just going to, shorthand that. And we learn from this vision that Lilith is seeking her son's chamber, Rathma. He is the first necromancer, and most importantly, I already said that. And he's also the safekeeper to the key of hell. Interesting. Lore-wise, we're familiar that Lilith is banished from hell for consorting with an angel and creating a realm outside of hell with that. She is not very welcome there. Likewise, Anarius has been banished from heaven for consorting with the devil and, of course, taking the World Stone down. And then you can play Diablo 2 to figure out what the hell happened with the World Stone.
I'm curious how much of this game is drawing on the story of Diablo 3 and how much of it is mostly drawing on Diablo 2.
Both. There's some Diablo 3 with mention to some of the characters, and there's a good amount of Diablo 2 as well. I don't think it's retconning anything as far as I'm aware. But the events of Diablo 3 were pretty final in a lot of ways. And this card, there's also a lot that's drawing on complete the stuff that has been completely untouched by both Diablo 2 and 3, which I think is the best choice, because there's a lot in this world that those games didn't touch. And Diablo 1 was really insular. Diablo 1 focused exclusively on Tristram. After all of that, we are like, okay, we're kind of stuck here at the bottom of this mine.
Her mom dies, by the way.
Yes, and we have to kill her mom, because her mom, in fact, was consorting with Lilith, because Lilith promised her knowledge. And she eventually got consumed with hatred for her own daughter. And so we kill her. That sucks. And Nero's super sad. She needs some time to mourn that. And then she's like, all right, I'm going to go to this Herodric vault that I know is nearby. You should go talk to the cathedral. So we do. We talk to the cathedral because we need a blessing to cross this, what's it called? The Black Lake. There's a black lake at the bottom of the mine shaft that will get us to Rathma's vault.
Yes, and to get the blessing, we need to run around carrying this statue all over the place.
Yeah, we rendezvous with Mama Religious Lady this is a boring pilgrimage. We pick up an idol, and it's supposed to be some grueling thing, but it's really not. But we learn some more about the religion in terms of some of their what are they called, tenets. And then we eventually make it up to the Alabaster Citadel or Cathedral, the Alabaster something, where Anarius is chilling, is hanging out.
Yeah, he's just there.
He is, at the end of the pilgrimage, what I consider to be the much more interesting antagonist, Anarius.
Yeah, no, he is also just an arrogant asshole, and he thinks the world is rotting from the inside.
He has this point got in his head that he is the realm's savior, and that we argue with him a bit about his blessing. He's like, why would I bless you? And it's like, I'm the one doing everything, and like, you don't, what are you gonna do, Lilith? I'm supposed to be the one that kills him. And it's like, well, we can actually stop her too, and we need to, we like, what's good for the that would be better for the realm if we do that. And he's like, what do you don't know what's good for the realm, get the fuck out of here. Like, you're, who are you? You're just nothing. I don't care about you. He thinks very highly of himself and nobody else. Which is apparently super cool in for religious Mama Prava. So she gives us a blessing because we're not dead.
And we go back to the mine and we use the blessing and we bring back dead mom. It's like a spirit.
Yeah, before we do that, we head to the vault and meet back up with Nerel. We get lost in this hazy illusion maze and get pulled out. Remember this? The fiery portal? This is pretty important.
We get
pulled out in a fiery portal by the skeleton wolf that saved us earlier, and he pulls us into a vision of Tristram, which, as I mentioned in Diablo 1, was blown the fuck up after the Haradrim had the really cool idea to bury Diablo's soulstone underneath it and build a village on top of it. Pretty clear. I was like, this wolf has a point. And the Haradrim do suck, and I fully believe that. I am fully of the opinion that the Haradrim are ass. They're not very good at their jobs.
I mean, it's not clear to me if the conditions of this world are as described that there's much anyone can do.
Pretty much. Well, we'll see. We'll see about that. This incredibly, I don't know. It's also, I have some notes here that I thought, well, this is probably foreshadowing something. I'm not sure what it is, but like, they wouldn't just, I mean, they would just take us back to Tristram for fun, because then you get the Tristram theme, the iconic sort of guitar strum. Very, very effective theme. But like, probably, I think the overall effect of this scene is pretty stellar. And also, that voice acting that the wolf has, I don't know, man. I think if I were to make a Hear Me Out cake, this wolf might go on it. That's pretty, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. We make it through the illusion and make our way deep into the vault with Nerel and get a cool book written by Rathma himself. Nerel reads the book and learns about a ritual to bring her mother back from the dead, and we have to learn the other ritual from her dead mother across the lake. Good enough.
Who is Rathma again?
Rathma is the son of Inarius and Lilith, and he is the first necromancer.
Okay. Oh, okay. Got it. That makes the cutscene that's going to about to happen here make more sense.
Yes. So in the vault, we marionette Vennard back to life and make her tell us the ritual, which she does, but not, you know, there's some touching moments here where she's like, oh my God, please let me go. And you should also let go of the hatred. This sucks. Don't do this. But she helps us out anyway, getting across the river. And she says, okay, well, what you have to do is put some blood in this thing. Your blood has Lilith in it, and that'll let you into the chamber. And cool. We're like, hey, guys, I'm thinking like, guys, I have a note here. Can we just try the blood thing on every door before we go on several wild goose chases? We seem to have infinity blood, and it seems to not hurt us to let it out. So let's just, you know, let's give it a shot next time. Descending through the passage towards Rathmus' chambers, we run into echoes of him, who grant us visions of the events in the past regarding how he foresaw the future and how his father is an asshole.
There was a bit here, I'm going to be honest, I walked past some of these, and it felt like I was like walking past like a Disney animatronic, as just like, yeah, the voice fades out as like I walk further down the hall. Like, you have come too late, as Lilith did before you, but it was for my father that...
Goodbye, Kevin, Kevin, Kevin. Kevin, 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 Kevin.
Anyway.
The end of the E.T. ride. and all of that. And there's a vision. He says, hey, you want my key so bad? I know you're going to kill me to try and take it. And that does, in fact, happen. And we walk in on Rathmus' dead body well after Lilith has retrieved the staff. Ah, we're too late. Ah, dang it.
Yeah, well, I bet we'll get her next time.
And the key to hell is within the staff that she took. She is upset that her son is dead, which is the most interesting thing about her so far. She's like a demon, a high-ranking demon that's capable of her own grief.
Again, what does Lilith want, and why does she want it?
That's the big question
or,
so far.
More broadly, what does she care about?
Notably, note here, I am already tired of just missing Lilith. If this continues on for five more acts, I'm going to be more and more upset.
Uh-huh.
Act two, pretty much. That's the end of it. We make our way back, and then we have to go talk to Donan, who is another Haradrim that Laura tasked us with meeting and conveying the message that Lilith is gone. Lilith is out.
Yeah, Donan is a guy who's a knight, right? And he runs a keep?
Yeah. Over in Ireland, the Church of England has taken up a lot of space and started encroaching on the Druids' territories, which is a very direct allegory. You know, I call it the Church of England and Ireland, but it's like, oh, the Church of Light and the Druids over here in Skosglen. Yeah, okay, I get what you're doing here.
Earlier on, Nerell's mom was like spilling blood over with just a Sephiroth. Like, just like, yeah. Some of the stuff is not very subtle.
It's not subtle, but it does maybe need to be said. It's very clear at this point that the church, like, we're talking with Druids on the way to the keep, and it's clear, and other people who are very upset that the church has taken up all this space in Skosglen, and they're fucking up with their traditions, and they're making everything worse because their wards work in keeping spirits out. What are your walls going to do against ghosts, right? Anyway, the church, it's interesting. This is kind of the first, one of the first, maybe the first game where the church isn't just like this morally pure and good thing, and not like the Cathedral of Light. Like, there has been a church, like the church of Zakharum in Diablo 2, that was the front of everything, that like, where like everything is so light or whatever, the front of Mephisto and stuff. The church isn't just morally pure and good, right? But I can't help but wonder where this is all going that would like make me happy, because right now it's like very direct. I was like, where would this, like, where could this go that would be interesting? Like, are we going to fight the church in the end? Are we going to end up siding with Lilith? Like, are people just rebelling against the church? Like, who? What's happening?
What if both sides are bad?
Okay, what if both sides are bad? I mean, clearly, like, at this point, it's telegraphed to us that Inarius is just as bad as Lilith and self-consumed in his own sins, right? In his own pride and his own hatred. And it's taking over the realm as well.
No gods, no kings, no masters!
Donan and his son, Yorin, are at Eldheim Keep. Or Eldheim, I can't remember how to pronounce it.
Man, as soon as I met this kid, I knew he was doomed.
This kid's so doomed. This kid is fucking toast.
But father, I don't want to read books. I want to get out there with the military and fight on the front lines.
I want to see the world, father.
I could be out there with a sword doing good.
We relay the message from Loreth that Lilith is out and about and are tasked with checking out his house to follow up on this weird shit he saw. Turns out,
called Firebreak Manor, which I don't know that I would build a manor where it would be a firebreak. That seems like
the fire department would be pretty upset with you. The vision of Lilith in his basement, we get asking him to let him in his house and show him some knowledge of things that he knows, because he knows that the Haradrim are not want to banish demons. They like to just keep them close.
This vision is actually pretty cool. Like, a motif that we often see for otherworldly stuff is, like, you know, a doorway floating in the air. This is the first time I've seen someone do it with, like, a gothic cathedral doorway. It's got, like, the pointed arch and a big wooden slab, and it's just hovering there in the middle of his floor.
Yeah, the Diablo... Oh, I mean, Blizzard art department always fucks, but the Diablo team in particular fucks. The art in this game is so believably like, otherworldly... And excellent, it's very, very rapturous and also seductive. It's like it adds so much to the story just looking at the choices that the art department makes with everything they do. Meanwhile, goats.
Yeah, what? We get out there and there's goat men running around. These filthy pagans.
Oh yeah, there's actually goat men that are in line with some demons. They are, well, some demons. They are in line, basically, with what's going on down below. They always have been. The Moon Clan are known worshippers of the primevals, and they're causing death and destruction. They're getting more and more powerful as Lilith wanders the realm. We clear them out. We go talk to the druid, and Donan tasks us with talking to the druids that helped him dethrone Astaroth, a mighty evil that reigned over the land of Skosglen during what was a period known as the Reign of Ash. And both of these druids are mad at him for bringing the church to Ireland.
Wait, so here's the thing.
Yes.
So with how much they're talking about Astaroth and making a big deal about Astaroth in this section of the game, I was like, oh, Astaroth. I bet he's like some big guy from the previous games, right? He's coming back for this
one?
Nope.
He is new in this, but the Days of Ash were well documented. So Diablo nerds were excited to finally see him, probably.
Okay.
Yes, this is very, very interesting. The North Druid, we get to the village in the north. There's a Druid there, not the one, not necessarily the, well, actually, no, this is the one that, that helped him out. She's like, hey, cool. Like, yeah, I get it. Can you help us with these ghosts? They're restless, though. Like, can you just help us right now, and then we'll deal with whatever you're doing? And Yoram is there, and he says, hey, I shall help you. I am very interested in wandering with you and figuring out what's going on. And we're like, all right, cool. Yoram has an idea that to take us through some of these cairns that are haunted.
So haunted. Oh. I mean, everything in this world is haunted.
Everything is very haunted, very gory, and so many bones.
Yeah, all of the cairns have been defiled and turned to demonic ends. The revered dead have been turned into monsters. Oh, okay. This actually is where something the story appears to be about is coming to focus for me, which is like the recurring theme at this point appears to be that Lilith is not just tempting anyone, she is tempting religious leaders, community leaders, mm-hmm. intellectuals. Like, she is, like, going after people who are in positions of some sort of, like, influence.
Yes. She's tempting them, and she is telling them something. Her story is pretty consistent, and it starts with Erida, who is in charge of the cairns and like, monitoring the dead, who has been letting them out. She tells her that hell is coming, and that your people need to be strong. And Herida says, okay, how about I do a little social Darwinism?
Yep.
Or maybe actually just violent Darwinism by way of killing everyone. And everyone that doesn't live through the ghosts couldn't possibly contribute to the war effort against hell, right?
It'd be a great exchange. We meet her on a clifftop in the middle of a storm. And
oh, yeah.
Like, you've fallen for the demon lies. And she's like, no, this is my choice.
Okay, sure. And she's playing her little violin. She seems nice enough, but she knows it's one of those times, kind of like in Kill Bill, with the meeting where Beatrix meets Bill, and they have a pleasant moment together before she kills Bill. Spoilers. But like, yeah, the storm is coming. They have this tete-a-tete, and she makes us fight her. And at this point, this boss battle, I am already very over boring ass boss battle designs that are like, you do a bunch of damage, they go immune, and you kill their totems or their pillars or whatever, or their minions, and then you kill them again, right? Very over it. This has happened a few times at this point. Please do something else. I know you're capable of it.
Slight sidebar here. I rewatched the first Kill Bill film while I was in Texas the other week. Boy, talk about a movie that just anticipated all of modern Hollywood.
Yeah. Pretty, like, and influenced.
Yeah, but just like John Wick is just Kill Bill without any irony.
Yeah. Oh, well. Oh, well. Anyway. we kill the druid, and we demand the knowledge. We kill this druid, Erida, and she tells us what she told Lilith, that there is a way to unseal and get to Astaroth. She knows, no, so now Lilith knows the method in which she is capable of unsealing the soul stone, the case of the soul stone, Astaroth.
She's like assembling her clue board, you know?
Yes.
She's got like, okay, I got location, I got method.
But she doesn't know where Astaroth is yet.
Oh, she doesn't have location yet, you're right. It could be in the billiards room or the kitchen.
Yes. Or it could be extremely obvious where it is, because we know how the Haradrim operate. They've been operating like this for three games. I guess she's been out of commission. She's new to this realm, you know, even though she made it. The East Druid, we hear about whispers of the East Druid, whose name I can't remember. It starts with an N. And he's super mad. He is holding on to a lot of hatred for this, of course, this cathedral stuff. And he basically tries to kill anyone who approaches him at any point and has domain over this eastern forest. But we're pretty badass. So we're given a lead to go find his wolf familiar by a local townie. And the dog does take us into a dog sniffs us, realizes we're not with the cathedral in any shape or form, even though we kind of are. I don't know. Whatever. He takes us into a thicket made of blood trees. Uh-oh. That's getting creepy. So we eventually run into... Well, not run into. After we follow the dog, we run into this mad druid, and he's part of the blood trees.
Yeah, he's crucified is how I wrote it down, but I don't really know how to describe it.
He is, in fact, kind of half of him is existing.
Tree.
Half of him is existing in this tree, and half of him is just bleeding everywhere, causing all this blood to go. And he succumbed to the daughter of hatred, who, I don't know. Pretty easy. Like, I was kind of interested to see what this guy's point of view was, but I was like, oh, yeah, of course he's pretty much dying by the time we get there.
To his credit, he's like, it's too late for me, but Lilith went that way. Go get her.
So we try to go get her. We have to kill some cysts to unlock this door. It's gross. Turns out there's, again, as I mentioned before, everyone seems to have infinite blood because holy fuck, there's so much blood from this guy. And it's, in fact, summoning a blood dog. Yay! We fight this blood dog. It has like 9 heads or whatever. For a little bit, we weaken it, and then it runs away. I'm like, well, all right. Damn it.
And then we learn that he gave Lilith the location of Astaroth in exchange for her vowing to destroy the Knight's Penitent. And it's like, oh, it's back in Eldheim. It's under the keep.
Yes. The Haradrim did put a soul stone underground and put a town on top of it. Because that's the only thing they know how to do with soul stones.
So we get back to the keep, and it's overrun with monsters.
No shit. Ah, shit.
Which actually, like, okay, little technical thing I found kind of impressive, especially having played a bunch of Final Fantasy 14. Neat that, like, that when we get back to Eldheim, it has undergone a state change to a state where, like, it's on fire and there's monsters everywhere. Mm-hmm. While being, as far as I can tell, pretty seamless with, like, you know, our movement around in the overworld.
Yeah, I knew this place was fucked. I was like, this is a big city and it doesn't have a waypoint in it. That's not good.
Yeah, I noticed that also. I was kind of annoyed by it.
Why the hell? Oh, this place isn't good.
Anyway, Donan, he went ahead into the keep. We have to rescue him. It's fun briefly at the start of this to have a dungeon that's not underground. We're kind of like running across like the battlements of the keep, but then it turns into a cave at the end. So
yeah, it's another cave. Let's see. Sorry, where was that? Yeah, that I felt that this dungeon was a little padded. Let's see. Now we know Lilith where is. We better go stop her. It would be a shame if we were too late. Aw, nuts.
She
got there just before us. Eldheim blew up.
Also there with. And then with the kid.
Yeah, and we get a vision because we just missed her. The soul stone is gone, and she used it she shoved it in Yoren's head as one does to make somebody a host for a demon contained in a soul stone.
And look, at this point, I think that kid's dead, but Doran is like, no, it's not too late. We can still rescue him. I'm like, can we? I think his brain is gone.
The kid is... there's a little bit of time. If that kid were maybe a stronger soul, maybe he wouldn't be completely dead. Because at the end of Diablo 1, that's what the protagonist does with Diablo's Soul Stone to contain Diablo. And then that leads into the events of Diablo 2, which is very clever. So there's like a bit of more time, but no, that kid's this little wiener, he's not lasting long against a big demon like Astaroth. So yeah, at this point, all the characters are like, what does Lilith even want? Why would she want Astaroth? Astaroth, the person that has domain over the Sea of Fire and the Realm of Hatred, why would Lilith want to go back to the Realm of Hatred where everyone hates her? And I'm like, I don't know. It seems like she's building up a fucking pretty big army here, guys. like, isn't it? I feel like I had a note here that's like, she probably wants to take over Sanctuary and then use Sanctuary to take over Hell, right? That seems to be what's happening here.
I mean, that makes sense when you say it like that. I wouldn't have gotten there because I'm still trying to grab that bowling ball.
Well, we'll see if that note's right or not, because, I did have it here, and I pulled it from my kind of experience with Diablo 3 and being like, okay, like, usually, like, with Diablo 3, like, we stuffed a bunch of demons together in a stone and then used that to go fight heaven, which was really interesting. They used it to go fight heaven, and then we went into heaven to fight them, right? Like, usually that's where this goes. So that was my prediction. My other prediction at this point was that Donan was going to die, and we were... Because, like, I saw in the stable, I was like, oh, Donan's blessing, and then we get a horse. So I'm like, okay, maybe Donan's going to die and we get his horse later? That'll be interesting to see if that comes through. So those are like... But I was like, this is... I feel like it's not, I don't know. I guess if you didn't get it, but like, I mean, at this point I was like, she's amassing an army and she's looking for the keys and passage into hell. You guys.
I think what I'm missing is a lot of understanding of the cosmology and history that you're providing me on this podcast.
Possibly. But like, I don't know why she wants to do that, but I know that she's like, I would figure like, what else is she going to do with a massive army and the keys to hell?
I think like her antagonism to hell is helping some of this click into place.
Yeah. Yeah. I did know that she, because her and hell don't get along because, of course, again, she consorted with an angel to make a realm outside that hell did not have access to. And everyone in hell was like, why the fuck did you do that? Get the fuck out of here.
God, is this just Neon Genesis Evangelion?
Did you say Evangelion?
Evangelion, whatever. Neon Genesis
Evangelion, but the hair gel is way goopy. That's the best joke I could have come up with in a second.
You got
so
the
sorry.
Children of Lilith, you got the angels, you got the... Are there big seeds? Are there big seeds anywhere?
Possibly. Seeds, capital T.
No, not capital D.
But that's the end of Act 2. Well, no, it's not. We go and fight.
Yeah, we go fight Yorin, who has turned into a big demon.
Riding the dog.
Yep. And this was really the moment where I was like, huh, this is a really cool cutscene to introduce a guy I beat in about 45 seconds.
Yeah, kind of sad, but like, I was like, this is just, whatever you're going to do. Like, what, is he just going to get away after like we beat him and then beat us in the cutscene? Like, we beat the shit out of him, and then he's dead.
The fight could have been harder, but okay. Yeah,
well,
yeah, I get it.
The thing is that... Yes, so yeah, the fight could have been harder, obviously, but it was still like a cool fight where the dog like ran around the town.
That's
instead
true.
Of like just going immune, and we're like, whatever, like, oh, you just use the mechanics of like jumping, which are new, by the way.
Yeah,
the like jumping mechanics cool. And mm-hmm. the climbing and stuff where you can go around the map like that.
Is the overworld new?
Yes, that's also new.
My
the
impression of
world,
Diablo was always it was a dungeon crawler primarily.
Pretty much, there's a procedurally generated map crawler, and you could like go into dungeons as well. Anyway, that's a lot. We've talked a lot about Diablo 4. Overall, pretty good start to the expansion. Some repetitive notes in the story. I guess understanding the cosmology a little bit better from having played previous games is helpful. But otherwise, would you say that this isn't too bad of a place to jump in?
No, absolutely not.
No.
It's more that, like, I don't know what degree I should care about the story at all, but...
Let's keep going and find out. There's a lot of lore. This is a lore heavy game. And unfortunately the Diablo wiki is a fucking nightmare. It's absolutely riddled with ads that load at like all different times. So you're trying to read a paragraph and then the page just goes boop, 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 and it's like, oh my God.
I can't even tell if I found the right Diablo wiki. There's like three of them, I think.
Yeah, this is a very well fleshed out universe and map and stuff, and it's really interesting. It's always interesting when they go new places or places we haven't been and talk about events that have been referred to in the past as well. And so far, this game is doing a pretty good job of fleshing this world out. I am interested in Lilith. She seems like an interesting antagonist. I wish we got more time with her in the same space. We only barely saw her, and then we just missed her. And it's just like the whole of every Diablo game is kind of a goose chase here, or just kind of always just missing somebody and then things are happening before you.
I think that's the bit that, like, I'm enjoying talking about this with you in terms of emotional investment.
Yes.
A story in which my character does not appear to make any decisions or have any impact on the progression of the plot is difficult to fully immerse myself in.
Yeah, it's a tricky proposition, and that's largely how the old Diablo games, especially Diablo 2, like, our characters don't really do too much. They may have a couple of voice lines that are peppered in that are agnostic of context.
It's not ready yet. I can't do that yet. It's not ready yet.
Oh. Yes, that's a good one. There's the sorceress voice in Diablo 2 going, I need mana.
I need mana.
I need mana. Not enough mana. Like, okay, I got it. But otherwise, great time. I'm looking forward to talking about Acts 3 and 4 next week alongside the video game Grim Fandango.
Yes.
Very excited.
Oh, I can't wait for Grim Fandango.
I have not played it. Looking forward to it. Very, apparently highly lauded adventure, point-and-click adventure game. So, right up my alley. But thank you all so much for joining us on this episode of Storm Bones. I hope you look forward to getting creepy crawlied out next week as we keep talking, and you can continue the discussion with our social media. Links are in the description of the episode, including a link to our Discord, where we talk about games we're playing. I provide additional screenshots and fun things like that. We also often have polls and other engagement that you can be a part of. If only you'd go to the link in the description of the episode. That would be very, very helpful. Also would be helpful if you were to rate and review and share the podcast with like-minded gaming individuals who would be interested in such content.
We don't do any advertising, guys. It's only word of mouth. So, you know, you gotta tell your friends.
You know, that probably is on us.
I don't know. Man, I don't know that the ROI in advertising would be very high.
That's okay. It probably wouldn't be. But we could do more to... We could do more
as individuals. We can do more promotional stuff.
But you know what? We're busy. We have a lot of things to do in our personal lives. But we still enjoy making this. I'm going to keep talking like this.
Okay, no, we're
going to
wrap it up.
We are going to wrap it up now. Thank you so much. I have been your creepy crawly ghoul of light, Jerome Barbutsis. And I've been joined by my co-Frankenstein of light, Alexander. I've got to come up with a better one.
Hambook is right there.
No, that's not good enough.
Alexandracula
Hambrook? Alexandracula Hambrook!
There you go.
Thank you all so much, and good night.
Good night, everyone.
I had to do my best to get a bead on Ben Starr's voice, and I can't really speak that low, but it's hard, because... I'm looking at Ben Starr, right? And I'm like, I'm looking at this man. He looks, it's like as if there was a blueprint for a type of person. And that is the person that I am meant to be. Like, I came out of the factory looking a little off. Like, I was a test version of that. You know what I mean? Like,
you think his, like...
his, first off, he has a full head of beautiful black hair that is as deep as the night sky. He's got, I mean, he doesn't have my weird forehead thing.
What weird forehead thing?
My weird forehead red thing. And then also this shape, this bump that I have. I don't like my, his eyes are a rich caramel. His skin is as dewy as the Ides of May. It's ridiculous. It is absolutely outrageous. How much like better of a version of a person this person is than me, and he's a successful voice actor with just the sweetest drip of amber honey of a voice. Unbelievable. I mean, Final Fantasy 16 was a treat just to hear that. The parts where Clive was like more sonorous and you could hear a bit of more of that, Ben was like, ooh, so good. And It is so hard to look at that when you're just like,
I did not realize.
I'm so jealous.
I did not realize you had this much of an emotional reaction to this guy's face.
It's like I'm, and just like the everything, because it's like he's, I mean, a similar game. Like, I don't know what I would do in this presence of this person. I'd be like, I'm like, all of the sins are coming out at once, basically. Just like the envy I feel toward this amazing person who is probably also really, really, really nice and perfect.
I just had a really funny idea you're going to find out about in several months.
Oh, great, great, great. I can't wait. I can't wait for my birthday or Christmas gift that is a cameo from Ben Starr. I can't fucking wait. I'm going to melt. I'm going to melt in a fury. I'm going to succumb to Lilith just like, I don't know, man. Or maybe Diablo. Just fear and agony. Oh my God, don't do it. Don't do it. Definitely don't tag Ben Starr in the clip I'm going to make of the opening. Don't everyone do that.